I'm happy and proud to introduce Andy Wilson, who works for Governor DeWine as his senior criminal justice policy executive. We've been fortunate to have Andy involved in criminal justice work for quite a long time. He formerly was the Clark County elected prosecutor, so he has a little bit of experience in criminal justice matters. He's going to give us an idea of the administration's focus and interest in criminal justice reform and how that all fits with what we've already heard today and what we'll hear this afternoon in kind of the national look. So thank you, Andy. We're happy to have you.
Sarah, thank you very much. Can everybody hear me? First of all, I'll make sure this lapel mic's working. We're good? Thumbs up? All right, excellent. Well, listen, thank you very much for having me this afternoon. I was asked to come and speak a little bit about the governor's philosophy on criminal justice reform, some of his priorities in the realm of criminal justice reform. And I would be remiss if I talked about this subject without laying a little bit of context for who the governor is and what he's about. I can tell you without a doubt that the governor is a public safety-minded guy. Now, that should come as no surprise to anybody in this room who knows him. He's a former prosecutor, he's a former attorney general, and in the 9-10 months that I've worked over here in Columbus on his senior staff, I have heard him on multiple occasions say to us that the number one job of the government is to protect its citizens. Now, if you think about it, that makes perfect sense. You know, he understands that if we don't have safe communities, none of his other initiatives are going to thrive. And he's got a lot of ideas and a lot of initiatives. You know, near and dear to his heart are kids, families, and schools. It doesn't matter, though, if he has the best plan on how to improve our schools if we send kids to schools that are surrounded by neighborhoods that aren't safe. Those kids leave that school, and on every corner between their house and that school, there's a drug dealer trying to sling dope at them. Or they leave that school and they walk into a community that is just rife with gun violence. The governor can pour as much money as he wants to into children's initiatives, but if those kids don't live in a house that's free from domestic and sexual violence, then the governor's initiatives are truly never going to thrive. It just makes sense that he puts so much emphasis on public safety. So I wanted to lay that out there just so everybody in the room is aware that when we're talking about criminal justice issues, the governor's default is always going to be towards keeping people safe. Another philosophy he has, another part of criminal justice being governor that's important to him, is the overwhelming need to protect vulnerable populations. He's told us since the day we went to work for him, since our very first senior staff meeting, that his administration is going to take care of people at the beginning of their lives, that we're going to take care of people at the end of their lives, and we're going to take care of people living in the shadows of life. And again, when you look at public safety, he's really talking about taking care of people who are vulnerable. You know, people who are too young to take care of themselves, people because of their older age can't take care of themselves, or people because of choices that they've made, conditions in life, aren't fully able to take care of themselves. And when we talk about vulnerable populations and people living in the shadows of life, we don't get much more vulnerable than folks who are bouncing in and out of our jails, in and out of our prisons, people who are limited from reaching their full potential because of choices that they made that have brought them into contact with the criminal justice system. So it's important, again, before I even start talking about his priorities in the criminal justice world, to kind of lay that context for you, or lay out that context for you, so you can kind of see what goes on behind the scenes when he's thinking in this space. With respect to the governor's philosophy or his priorities in criminal justice reform, and I'm going to talk broadly about criminal justice reform, not just about the drug issues, but just overall some of the governor's ideas in this space. The governor really has three priorities, three areas where he concentrates. First of all, when it comes to incarceration, The governor said multiple times to us, look, we have to make sure that we're incarcerating the right people, all right? That we are people who need to be taken off the streets are taken off the streets. People who can be better treated in other through other avenues, that we're making sure that we're getting those folks to the right place. The second area that he's talked about is we have to make sure that when we have people incarcerated, we have people who are having contact with the criminal justice system, that we are truly and meaningfully rehabilitating those folks. That we're just not warehousing people. We're giving them the skills they need to actually succeed when they move out of the criminal justice system. And then the third area that I've heard the governor talk about on multiple occasions is forgiveness and redemption. And that's been a theme, again, that you've heard throughout this morning. Once people are rehabilitated, once people have proven that they're rehabilitated, we need to forgive them, we need to redeem them, and we need to do everything in our power to ensure that they can integrate back into their communities as fully functioning and productive members of society. So those are the three general areas that he talked about, and I want to take a few minutes and I want to talk about each one of those areas individually. When you talk about making sure that we're getting the right people in prison, really, folks kind of fall into three different groups. The first group are people who are violent, people who are dangerous, people who prey on the very vulnerable people that the governor is seeking to protect. Murderers, sex offenders, drug traffickers, people who use guns to commit their crimes, and again, people who prey on vulnerable populations. The governor has no problem with those folks being in prison. As a matter of fact, he believes wholeheartedly that those are exactly the kind of people we build prisons for. And those are the kind of people that we need to protect our community from. So that's an easy group to deal with respect to the governor's philosophy. The other side of the spectrum, though, from that group, is the people that we've talked about all morning. The folks who the root of their problem is drug issues. They're nonviolent, lower level felonies. Folks who can be better served by not going into prison to begin with. Look, the governor fully supports the concept of diverting the appropriate lower level nonviolent offenders out of Ohio's prisons. He wholeheartedly believes that those folks are best served through other treatment means to address really their addiction and criminal behavior. Obviously, the governor, you've seen this through the governor's budget. He's a huge proponent of specialty dockets and specialty courts, drug courts. Just within the last couple weeks, we've announced, or the governor's administration has announced, that the funding and the grants are available for local courts to put in new specialty dockets. And those will be funded, the new dockets will be funded at $75,000 a year for 2 years, or for these first 2 years throughout this budget cycle. And the goal is to establish 30 new drug courts. Those are courts where people, again, who the root of their criminal behavior is a drug issue, they don't really even go into the prison path. They're diverted out. The courts have smaller dockets. The courts concentrate, obviously, on the drug issues, and they've been wildly successful, or some of them throughout the state have been wildly successful. What we need to do now is we need to make sure that local jurisdictions are taking part of that money and putting these new courts into place. And we've worked with the Supreme Court and the folks at the Supreme Court in getting the word out, and they do a great job with their specialty docket program over at the Supreme Court. The governor also supports the idea or the concept of expanding treatment in lieu of conviction. And the idea that we can divert people out of the prison system by expanding the treatment in lieu program. And he's a big supporter of that, and he thinks that's an incredibly effective tool that will allow people to get back on their feet and ultimately avoid the stigma of a lifelong felony conviction. Another area that the governor sees as extremely useful as an alternative to prison that I really haven't heard mentioned too much this morning is the use of community-based correction facilities. We have, as an administration, I've seen some folks from CBCFs here today or so far this morning. We as administration, we've been out to the CBCFs. We've seen the good work that they do. If there's folks in here who've never been to a CBCF, I encourage you to go do a visit. We used them all the time as a local court in Clark County. We would send folks over to the CBCFs, and we found that they were extremely effective in dealing with people who really, we didn't have the jail population, or we didn't have the jail room to address their issues. They probably weren't necessarily appropriate to go to prison, and they had their needs for treatment, for cognitive behavioral therapy, for anger management, for drug issues. Their treatment needs were robust enough that the CBCF actually had programming that could address those needs. They were incredibly effective tools. So as we look at ways to divert people out of the prison system and to drive people into alternative treatment environments, we're certainly looking at CBCFs as an option for that. Another tool that is extremely underutilized in the state of Ohio are community alternative sentencing centers. Now, they're only set up for misdemeanors right now, and there's only a couple of them operating in the state. But since the governor's been in office, we've been working with the folks down in Jackson County on the possibility of helping them establish a regional community alternative sentencing center down there. That would be a 160-bed facility separated into four treatment pods of 40 different beds. It would be an incredible tool down there to relieve pressure on the local jails as the default treatment facilities, and that concept, the community alternative sentencing center concept, is certainly something that the administration looks to support as an option. Now, look, there's also the opportunity to expand what they can do into the felony world and take some of the pressure off of some of the felony courts with the appropriate legislation that would allow those casts to take lower level felons. So again, That's an option as well. So I've talked about the people who are dangerous. I've talked about the people who the basis of their issues are really kind of drug issues, and they're lower level nonviolent felons. The third group in trying to get the right people in prison or trying to figure out what to do with these folks is the group in between. And this is the group that frustrates the local judges. It frustrates the local law enforcement officers. And frankly, it frustrates the governor. These are the folks who are perpetually violating their rules of probation. These are the folks who are perpetually committing lower level nonviolent offenses to the point where judges, local judges, have exhausted their options locally. You know, they've tried to keep them in the community. They've tried to work with them in the community. And for one reason or other, these folks are continually either committing new crimes or violating the rules of probation of their probation. Again, the governor's frustrated with that. The governor's looking at possible solutions to dealing with that population. Again, is the CBCFs? Do the CBCFs have a role in dealing with that? One of the things we've talked about at DRC. I don't know if Kyle Petty's still here or not from DRC. One of the things we've talked about at DRC is is there something we can do with violation centers? You know, can we establish something in DRC that's short of the traditional warehouse prison type setting and is actually a violation center? It'd be a minimum security. It'd almost be like a beefed up CBCF where folks who just aren't following the rules of probation can go and get more specific treatment with respect to whatever their issues are that are causing them to violate. So those are some of the options we're looking at with respect to getting the folks into the right place. And I got to start watching my time here because I'm certain I'll go over if I'm not careful. So let's look at the second area that the governor looks at. He wants to make sure that, look, when folks come to prison, when folks are incarcerated, when folks have contact with the criminal justice system, that we are doing everything in our power to ensure that they are rehabilitated. Now, look, when these folks commit a crime, again, the governor understands that to a certain extent they owe a debt to society. They violated the social contract and they owe a debt to society. But the governor believes wholeheartedly that we owe them something as well. And we owe them the teaching, the counseling, the skills necessary to ensure that if they are serious about rehabilitation, they can take advantage of those services and that they can gain the skills necessary so that when they get out, they can become productive members of society. That's not just the soft skills. That's not the addiction issues. Again, the prison is, we've got a pretty robust medical assisted therapy program that we're running. It's not just the cognitive behavioral therapy. It's not just the anger management. We have got to do a better job with the hard skills. All right, we've got to do a better job with the vocational training for folks. It is absurd in this state that we have employers out there who are dying for skilled laborers. Yet as the state, we are sitting on the biggest potential pool of skilled laborers that you could ever find. And they're a captive audience. And we are not providing them with the vocational tools that they need to go out and fulfill those workforce needs. Again, there's a lot of issues with that when they get out, but man, there are a lot of employers out there who are willing to hire felons in this day and age. And if we could send them a workforce that's trained and has the skills necessary, we literally could be setting those folks on a path that'll alter their lives. One of the things we have to do if we're serious about making sure that people can be fully rehabilitated in prison is we've got to remove the impediments to rehabilitation in prison. And one of those impediments is we've got to make our prisons more secure. The amount of contraband, the amount of drugs that we have rolling into our prison is insane. You know, Suboxone strips can be basically put onto a cardboard, or not cardboard, but a colored paper. You can draw a picture, you can take a crown, you can take a Suboxone strip, and you can go over that Suboxone strip with the crown, and you can integrate a Suboxone strip into a colored paper, or picture, fold it up, send it into the prison. They have a new program in the prisons, one of the problems we're having, and this sounds, when I first heard it, it just didn't even sound like it could be true. One of the problems we're having in prison is drone overflights. It's real, drone overflights. Now, Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, but we now have, in some of the prisons, we have systems that can detect drone overflights and where drugs and other contraband are being dropped in the prison yard. So basically someone from the outside flies a drone over and drops drugs in the yard and someone inside goes and gets it. I believe that in one of the prisons, the first weekend they had it up, they had 200 drone overflights in one weekend. 200. How in the world are we ever going to get people to be serious about their rehabilitation, serious about their substance abuse issues in prison, if we have drugs coming in on that scale? We've got to do a better job of cutting that off, because we'll never send those folks out better than they came in if we don't address that issue and the issues that brought them there. One of the problems that we're having when it comes to rehabilitation in prison is we have got to find a better way to incentivize people to engage in rehabilitation services. All right, we've had a lot of problems lately with folks who are coming out, folks who are on parole. And when they come out on parole, you look at them and they really didn't do anything with respect to programming when they were in the prison. And then they commit a heinous crime shortly after coming out. What's interesting, it's not parole. I said it wrong. When you look at it, these folks are actually on post-release control. The last couple cases that we've had, folks have been on post-release control. That means they did their time. Under truth in sentencing, they did all of their time, and they knew that if they got 5 years, they didn't have to do anything during that 5 years. At the end of that 5 years, they were getting out. So they didn't do anything when it came to rehabilitation. There's no record of them trying to rehabilitate themselves, and they get out, and what happens? You know, we have a crime issue. It may be time for us to take a look at truth in sentencing. Truth in sentencing has a place. As a former prosecutor, I've looked at many of victims, and there's utility when you tell a victim, somebody who's suffered a terrible loss at the hands of someone who's committed a crime, when you tell that victim, hey, look, 5 years means 5 years, all right? That's important for part of their healing process. So I get that. I get that part of it. But we can't allow these folks to go to prison and just sit and do nothing the entire time they're in there if we're truly trying to rehabilitate them. So we've got to figure out a way that we can incentivize folks to engage in rehabilitative services. So that's certainly important. We need to continue to improve our reentry services and basically bridging that gap between prison and the communities. There's a lot of different reentry organizations, and there's a lot of work being done in the reentry area. We need to make sure that we're fully bridging that gap. And then finally, with respect to rehabilitation or making sure that people are truly rehabilitated, we've got to take a look at the way we do post-release monitoring. We've got to make sure that we're looking at that folks are, again, getting the services they need. They're engaging in the services they need once they get out, but yet they aren't victimizing folks, and they aren't continuing to commit crimes. The governor, within the past couple weeks, has put together a working group on post-release supervision, and they are looking at many issues, but some of the issues they're looking at are the effectiveness of halfway houses in supporting needs of reentry. They're looking at examining the effectiveness of the ORAS system with respect to coming out of prison. They're looking at the adult parole authority's caseload sizes. They're looking at the effective use of GPS technology and monitoring folks who come out. And that's just some of the things they're looking at, and they're going to issue a report, at least a preliminary report, in the next 90 days. The final area that I want to talk about, and again, the governor, when I talk to him about this issue, I see his eyes light up, man, because forgiveness is a big thing for him. Redemption is a big thing for him. And he wholeheartedly believes that when somebody has done their time and when they've been rehabilitated and they've proven that they're rehabilitated, that their slate should be wiped clean and that they shouldn't have to wear the stone or the bear the cross of that conviction or their past sins forever. The governor is in support of removing collateral sanctions and expanding the ability to remove collateral sanctions for lower level nonviolent offenders. And again, expand that out as has been talked about to multiple convictions for some of these lower level nonviolent offense. He supports the concept of sealing records in some of those cases. Now, obviously there's exceptions. And we heard some talk about some of the holes in the record sealing. I think the Chief Justice nailed it. If everybody was here for the first presentation or last presentation, we need to look at the list of those limitations, and we need to be smart about where they apply and where they don't apply. And the governor wholly supports that. The governor, he is serious about using his executive power of pardon. And we're gonna talk about that. There's gonna be an announcement here in the next couple of weeks about some of the ideas the governor has for using the pardon. But I'll tell you a story that kind of highlights how he wants to use it. All right, I know a guy named Mark. I've known Mark since we were kids. And when Mark was 19, he was a hellraiser, all right? And he was a wild guy. But when we were 19 years old, Mark was in a bar, he got in a fight, and he got the best of somebody and ended up breaking the guy's jaw. As a result, he was prosecuted, and he was originally charged with felonious assault as a second-degree felony, and he pled to aggravated assault as a fourth-degree felony. All right? Aggravated assault, violent felony offense, not subject to expungement. He was placed on community control, or probation back then. He was placed on probation as a result of the plea deal, but that was a felony that he has to wear with him throughout his entire life. Now, what's interesting is here we are 25 years later, and Mark is extremely successful. Mark is an insurance claims adjuster. He goes all over the country and does insurance claims. He makes a lot of money. Mark's single. Mark's never been married, so Mark has actually a lot of disposable income. And Mark brings that money back to Clark County, where I'm from, and he spends it. He spends it in the county, and Mark spends money. Not only that, but again, Mark's single, never been married. He's got a lot of time on his hand. He devotes a lot of his time to helping troubled kids. And he actually works in an outreach center. He doesn't work there, but he volunteers in an outreach center where he tells the kids a story. He said, look, If I'd have hit that guy just an inch this way, inch that way, he would have fallen in his head the wrong way. I'd have murdered him. I'd have been on the hook for murder. And he talks about choices and he talks about decisions. And he does it in a fun way that the kids really kind of are drawn to. All right. So there's no doubt that Mark has been rehabilitated. But part of the problem is, in Mark's business, when he goes to other states, there are certain states that do background checks on claims adjusters, which, again, makes sense. But a felony conviction bars him, any felony conviction, bars him from some of the states. And he says, look, I can make significantly more money if I could get into some of these states and do some claims in those states. But he can't, and he's right now forever barred from getting into those states. As we looked at this issue, all right, there are thousands of Marks across this state. There are thousands of people who got swept up in the crack epidemic in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, who caught a conviction for a trafficking or something like that, did their time, and now have been 100% law-abiding good citizens. And the governor, his position is, look, I want to use the redemptive power of the pardon to address those folks. And I want to take away that felony conviction from them. Now, there's some problems with the system right now, and we're looking to address some of these. First of all, the pardon system as it exists in the state is backed up. It's kind of a mess. Because there's a lot of people in the pardon system who are murderers, child molesters, people still in prison for long periods of time who aren't really talking about how they've been rehabilitated, but they're using the pardon system to relitigate whether or not they're guilty or innocent. And that each one of those pardon applications has to be addressed. So a guy like Mark never takes advantage of it. The other problem is the guys all through the state, and I say guys, there's girls as well, the men and women all through the state who would be eligible, who would be great candidates for these pardons, a lot of them don't even know about it, don't even know it's an option. So we're looking to reach out to those folks. We're looking to market to those folks. We're looking to establish a system where we can screen to make sure that they're good candidates. And then once we ensure that they are good candidates, we're looking to put them in the fast lane to move their pardon through in a way it should be moved through. So again, what you're going to hear about this, the governor's going to talk about that here in the next couple weeks when they do the announcement. But if you are really trying to make these folks whole, if you're really trying to make sure that they have the ability to fully participate in society, there's a missing piece, and that's the record sealing piece. And Mark, we can give Mark a pardon, but the problem is the pardon doesn't seal the record. So we've got to figure out, for these folks who are actually really good candidates, these folks who truly have taken part in the rehabilitative service, people who've truly been rehabilitated, we've got to figure out how we can better address not just the pardon, not just the conviction, but the record, so that they truly can fully participate in society and truly realize all the benefits of a productive member of society. So that's it in a nutshell. I think I went a little bit past my time. I apologize. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come and speak on behalf of the governor, and I appreciate all the work that everybody in this room is doing.